Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, whoops, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing, hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
And good evening to you, and welcome to Maine Outdoors, Maine's most enduring, longest-lasting outdoor talk radio program in the state of Maine. We welcome you, and if you'd like to be on the program, the number is 1-800-966-1039, and even if you're calling locally, you have to dial the entire number, and we urge you to turn your radio down so you don't get that distracting echo. Anyway, we're pleased to have you aboard, and we have a good program lined up tonight. We have two different topics we'll be discussing. One is deer guns, the best deer guns in the state of Maine, and that ought to spark a little bit of controversy. Everybody has a different opinion of that, but we have a gun guy who writes a great gun column for the Northwood Sporting Journal. John Floyd will be with us first, and he'll discuss what he thinks are the best deer guns in Maine. You'll get an opportunity to question him if you care to do so. Then after 7:30, we're going to hook up with Kelsey Sullivan, and Kelsey is the game bird biologist for the state of Maine, and she's going to tell you what the outlook is for grouse in the state of Maine, or if you like to shoot them on the ground, they call them partridge. Isn't that right, Norm?
Yes, I don't mind doing that.
No, nobody does. Yeah, right. Anyway, we'll be having a good program tonight, and we hope you'll take part. And you're listening to us on WVOM, the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, and of course 95.1 down in the seacoast community of Rockland, Maine. Our crew tonight is introduced Bob Lehman, who will be talking to us with a fishing report in a few minutes. He'll be speaking from his phone booth over there on Allendale Road in Brewer. Bob always has a good fishing report, and we'll be looking forward to what he has to share with us tonight. And then, of course, the man behind the controls, the ever-present engineer, board op, whatever you want to call it, the guy who knows Grand Lake Stream like the back of his hand, and he is no slouch at other types of outdoor endeavors, Mr. Norm F. Plord.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome.
Nice to have you there behind those controls, Mr. Plord.
It's always fun.
We would be lost without you. Okay, right now, though, it's time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. Want to remind you, if you're interested in recommending a guest for our program, we always enjoy to have folks make suggestions. You can email me. Dash me off an email at V as in Victor, P-A-U-L, V-Paul R, at TDS.net. And again, the toll-free number here, you might want to jot it down, is 1-800-966-1039. And you know, we're a talk radio program, which means we enjoy your input and your participation. And we always encourage you to take part. Let's see. A lot of things going on in the state of Maine. Not all of them are good. Over the weekend, we had at least three ATV fatalities. This is not good, folks. You got to do better. We have, and there were three deaths on ATVs, and there's a common thread in all of them, sad to say. One involves nobody wearing helmets. None of the fatalities were wearing a helmet. That's not good. Speed was always a case in every one of the fatalities, according to the Game Warden Service, and they lost control of their ATVs and were thrown from them, and most of them were killed on the spot. So be careful out there in the ATVs. They're a lot of fun. People enjoy it. It's a great way to get in the outdoors, and will be even more activity as the early fall weather comes on. So give it some thought. Be careful. Don't drink and drive. Don't lose control. Use your head. Wear a helmet. Be safe. We want you to come back and enjoy the hunting season coming up and all the rest of the beautiful Maine fall. Let's see. What else? Oh, the North Maine Woods Association has put out a press release, and they're great folks. You know, for many, many years on this program, I've always spoke highly of them, and I'm so appreciative of the opportunity that we have to recreate in the great North Maine woods. And North Maine Woods organizes that, and they've done a wonderful job over the years, and we appreciate what they do. And as outdoorsmen, we need to show our appreciation for having access to all of that acreage up there in the wilderness in the North Maine Woods. And you can do that by being a good, thoughtful land user. And they wanted to let you know that things are going to be busy in the North Maine Woods this fall for a lot of reasons. A lot of folks who go to recreate in Canada will not be able to do so because of the border closure. A number of other things going on. More moose permits this year than ever before, which is going to mean more moose hunters up in the roads of the North Maine Woods. Gasoline prices are pretty good, so people are going to be traveling. Anyway, and at the checkpoints, of course, they're observing the COVID-19 protocols. And so this will take a little longer to check in, and they urge you to be patient and cooperate with the folks at the gates, and just enjoy yourself, enjoy the woods, and show respect for the landowners and, of course, North Maine Woods and all of its staff who do such a great job. Let's see. One other thing before we get to the fishing report. I want to remind you just briefly again that your Chesuncook Labor Day weekend Salmon Derby is still on. And that's a great opportunity not only to enjoy some great salmon fishing, and you can also chance to win a $500 prize, as well as a lot of other great other prizes. If you'd like to be in the Derby this the weekend of Labor Day, which I think is the 5th and 6th, isn't it, Norm?
I believe it is, right? Yeah.
If you'd like to be in the Derby, you have to buy a ticket in advance. You can buy tickets at, let me see here. I have it here somewhere. The Indian Trading Post in Greenville. Three Rivers Canoe and Tackle in Medway, and a couple other folks. Oh, you can also get them online as well. So don't forget the Big Derby. It's Saturday and Sunday, Labor Day weekend, and a $500 prize to the person who catches the heaviest landlocked salmon. And, of course, they are trying to cull these salmon so they'll grow, and you can keep as many salmon under 16 inches as you choose, and they encourage you to do that. Okay, I see. I think we're time to bring in the bandsman.
Well, for some strange reason,
a little button right there.
I think the band will come right now.
Okay.
Amazing what one button can do.
I'm the big boss bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah.
Okay, Bob Lehman, welcome aboard. How are you?
I'm great. How are you all?
Good. Does Alice laugh when you do that?
No, she's right here. I'm in the kitchen tonight.
Oh, you're in the kitchen.
I'm in the kitchen.
Oh.
And she just came in the door, and I told her I'm on the radio.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Now, so she wants to be quiet.
Put her on there. Put Alice on, would you?
Okay, hang on just a minute.
Let's say hello.
Hi, Alice.
Hello, Paul.
Hi, Alice. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm all right. I'm
How are those tomatoes coming? How are your tomatoes coming?
Oh, we got tons. We're going to have to can this week.
Oh, good for you. Hey, it's that time of year, right?
Yeah. Yes.
You know, Diane made me a beautiful blackberry pie.
Oh, I heard.
I'm going to have a slice of that tonight after I get back to the office.
Oh, it must be another one.
Oh, yeah, more than one. Yeah, we picked a lot of berries.
Yeah.
Hey, good to talk to you. I suppose you've got to put the old man on, right?
Yeah, I'll put the old man on. Right.
Okay, all right.
Here you go.
Bye, Alice.
Take care, Paul.
You too. Okay, Mr. Lehman, what's going on in the fishing world?
Well, kind of hot, you know. Last couple of weeks, the water's all. So I think we ought to talk a little bit about something a little different, night fishing. Now, that's something that's catching on lately. I noticed that years ago, I used to go up to a place that you and I fish, you know where that is.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites, Brooks.
Right.
And there was a gentleman that went up there by the name of Phil Higgins. You remember Phil?
Yep.
Phil's father used to run the Arthur Chapin Company in downtown Bangor. I believe they were wholesale grocers.
Right.
As I recall. Do you remember that?
No, not really.
No, you don't?
Well, I'm not quite as senior as you are.
Yes, yeah. Phil used to go to fishing up to one of our spots.
At night, nighttime?
The canoeman and a fly fisherman, too, yes. And he wouldn't go till he got out of work in 4, 5, 6 o'clock. And then he'd paddle down to the big hole. And he'd go over to the bank, and he'd wait right there, and he'd slip out a great big bundle of minnow after it got quite dark. And he'd come out of there with some nice trout.
I would think so, yeah. Yeah, fish like it when it gets dark, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So one of my friends, Bill Bowden, and I used to fish with for a long time, he went down there with him one night, and he says, it's all fine, but the mosquitoes eat you alive. And they get some nice fish, man, you pay the price.
Oh, yeah.
You come up out of there pitch black at night, for about a half a mile paddle that you can't see, touch and go. He says, I'll never do it again.
You know what you need to do? You need to invent a muddler minnow that has like a boat has running lights on it, port and starboard, so you can see where that fly. That's one of my problems. I don't do well night fishing because I get tangled up.
Well, that's another thing.
Yeah.
There's a fellow in Presque Isle who ran a print shop. His name is Lou Christie.
Yep.
And he didn't go till late. He went over to the Presque Isle stream, he and the boys. And they went over towards Easton, they're not too far from Presque Isle, after work. And they didn't fish until it got dark with a big white wolf.
And
they got beautiful trout over there. But, of course, that's what you got to do, I guess, in the summertime. Yeah. They're there.
Well, Wiggy Robinson.
They feed at night.
Yeah, Wiggy Robinson used to love to fish after dark on the West Branch. And he always used a big white wolf. Yep.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You bet.
Right.
Yep.
And Grand Lake Stream, a lot of people learn about Grand Lake Stream fishing after dark. My son, Bobby, I'll be sitting on the bank, and he won't even step into the water till it gets almost pitch black.
Right.
And I says, Bobby, aren't you going to fish? And he says, I'm waiting. And he'd come out of there with some nice fish. We put him back, but he caught a lot of nice fish. And there's a fellow in the control room that you can't get off the water, even in the pitch black dark, until... Well, what if you do? He's kicking and screaming like your son Scotty.
Oh yeah,
it's a nice time to be out there fishing at that time.
Yeah, they're both hardcore, no question.
They are.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
A lot like you, Paul.
Yeah. Well, I'm not. I'm a little. I've kind of mellowed a lot. I'm not a hard driver when it comes to fishing. I am with deer hunting. I'm still a hard driver. But I like to take a break on the stream.
But I slowed up a little.
Yeah, well, we all have.
Yeah. Well, anyway, a nice big, not necessarily a floater, but Bobby, I know, has better luck with an imitation bait fish, that's that he ties up. And like a streamer, but it has, a floating body.
Yep.
And at night, man, they'll bang that thing all over the place.
Oh, I'm sure.
But, they'll come out of the... out of that foam, and they'll come all the way down, and that's where they spend the day. And at night, they'll come out down into the shallows to feed. And if you put a light on, they're gone,
Oh, yeah.
You just get a fish in the dark.
Yeah, feel your way around, Well, that's good for the hardcore angler. You what?
That fishing is just around the corner at Grand Lake Stream.
All right, that's good news. All right,
sir.
Well, we appreciate you taking time to have the fishing report, Bob, and we'll talk to you soon. All right.
Oh, I hope so. Okay, fellas. Have a nice night.
Take care, Bob. Yep. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right. That was Bob Lehman with the fishing report. And again, we'll be talking soon to John Floyd, who's going to talk about Maine's best deer guns. But first, we have a trivia question, which we'd like to put to you. And if you have the answer to Norm's question, we are going to send you a limited edition watercolor print by yours truly. And you have your choice of a... one of them is called Ridge Runner, which is a big buck deer coming out of a swamp, or the other one, of course, is a moose painting. You'll have your choice of either. If you know the answer to this question.
And the question is, what is pemmican and what is it made from?
Pemmican.
Pemmican, okay.
What is pemmican?
Pemmican. Thanks for the correction, because I...
Have you ever heard of it?
I've heard of it, but not a heck of a lot.
So we want to know what it is, right?
Correct. We want to know what it is and what it's made from.
All right. 1-800-966-1039. You ponder that, and we will be right back. Okay, Norm and I are standing by waiting for you to answer this question. What is pemmican, and what is it made from? Let's take a call. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors.
Hi, B. Paul. This is Skip up in Heartland.
Hey, Skip. How are you?
Pretty good. I won a couple weeks ago, and I'm pretty sure I got it again today.
Oh, my goodness.
Here you go.
What did you win on a couple weeks ago?
The skunk getting into the honey.
Okay.
The honey.
All right. Well, there's no law against winning twice. What do you think the answer is, Skip?
Well, it's cured dried venison, and the Indians used to put it up, and sometimes they'd have nuts in it and berries and dry it and lug it around with them for sustenance.
All right. Now, since you are a professional winner, I'm going to really be a hard driver here, and I'm going to insist that you tell me what this.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Shoulders.
You're right so far, Skip, but there's one other essential ingredient that you must have in pemmican. Without it, it does not stay together.
Would it be some type of grease, bear grease?
There you go. There you go. All right. That's the correct answer, and congratulations, you have won. Now, have you ever tasted pemmican?
No, I haven't, but I'm somewhat of a history buff, and, you know, I like a lot of stories about the Native Americans.
Yeah, I do, too, and trappers and the
I think I learned that when I was in the Boy Scouts.
There you go. Well, you know, I wrote an article a couple years ago about pemmican, and a guy sent me 10 pounds of homemade pemmican.
That didn't bind you up much, did it?
Well, I was going to say, I ate a whole bar, and it was like lead.
That's 10 years worth, huh?
Yeah, and I guess I would, it was something, if I was very hungry, I would probably enjoy, but generally, it's a little, I don't know, it's a little funny.
I can imagine how it might not keep all that well.
No, we had to keep it refrigerated because it did have some kind of fat in it, I believe. Anyway,
one recommendation, V-Paul.
Yep.
I preferred to get a moose watercolor because I live next to Great Moose Pond here in Heartland.
Right.
And you sent me the Ridge Runner because you said you was fresh out. So if you check your inventory this time, I'd still prefer the moose if you got some back in.
All right. I did get some others, so I can send you the moose.
Yeah, because I don't want to double up on my Ridge Runner.
All right. That's good. Now, I hope you like the Ridge Runner.
I like it. I love it.
Great. Okay. Well, I'll make sure you get a copy of the moose. You want to stand by, Skip, and Norm is going to get your mailing address. We'll make sure it gets mailed out to you this week.
Well, that'd be wonderful.
All right, thanks.
You made my evening.
All right, well, you made ours, too. Nice to have you on board, and thanks for listening, Skip.
Yeah,
all right,
you too.
Take care.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. All right, that was the correct answer. Pemmican. It was used by the Indians and trappers way, way back, and they were out on the trail, and they had to have something that wouldn't spoil, and they had a little pouch that had all that dried powdered venison and a little berries in there, maybe some nuts and a little bear grease. Ooh. Okay. Now we're going to talk to our guest, I think. Are you there, John Floyd?
I'm here, Paul.
How are you tonight, John?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
We're great, and we appreciate you taking the time to be with us on this Sunday night. I explained to the listeners at the outset of the show that you write a column called, I think it's the Gun Cabinet, right?
Yes.
For the Northwood Sporting Journal, and we certainly appreciate your contributions every month, John.
Thank you.
We want to talk a little bit, it's kind of an old refrain, but whenever there's a deer camp, people get discussing what is the best deer gun to use in the state of Maine. I thought it might be interesting to kind of get your views on that and maybe get the audience to maybe chime in a little bit and either agree or disagree. What's your thought on that, John? What do you think is the ideal deer gun and why in Maine?
Well, I get asked that question a lot too, Paul, and I can say this unequivocally. The rifle that you are the most accurate with and the most comfortable with that can ethically kill that animal, that's the best deer rifle.
Okay. And so that's because accuracy is so important, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes we get so wrapped up in the newest model, the newest caliber. This gun does this cartridge does that we lose focus on what's most important, and that is shot placement.
Okay, let's do this. Assuming assuming that a person is accurate, you know, is a good marksman with a number of different rifles, and you had to maybe boil it down to three different types of rifles or calibers. Can you give us a little conversation about that?
Sure. For me, it's about environment. So if I'm in heavy brush in the woods, I want something that is fast handling, something that I can get a second shot off with quickly. For me, that gun is a Marlin 336 in 30-30 Winchester.
Okay.
If I'm hunting a field or if I'm hunting an area where I can take a long shot, I want a bolt action gun. And for me, I'm a big Remington 700 fan, and I would go in a 30-06 in that.
Okay. All right. How about the third one?
The third one for me is a little tricky. So the third one is kind of a blend. So you're not long, you're not short, you need something that can combine the two. And for me, that would be, and I'm not a big fan of Wildcat cartridges, but the 35 Whelen is hard to beat for punch and power in more of a compact rifle. It's kind of like the poor man's Magnum. It doesn't need some of the actions that the Magnums need, but you can get the power of a Magnum with that 35 Whelen, which is basically a 30-06 necked up to take a 358 bullet.
And of all the ones you mentioned, that's probably the best bear gun, right?
Well, now we're talking bear guns, Paul. So it's a little bit different.
Okay. I have a Marlin 336 and a 35 Remington, which I hunted with when I was a younger guy, and then my wife took up hunting, and she has possessed it. So I lost it to my wife, but it's a real nice deer gun, a Marlin 336 and a 35 Remington.
Can't go wrong with that. Yeah. I actually had a client kill a nice bear just 2 years ago, that very same rifle.
Yeah.
35 Remington, the bear went, I think, 15 yards. Just a great shooting, fast handling, accurate rifle.
Yeah. You know, I've noticed the highly respected big buck hunters in Maine, Hal Blood, the Berniers, and I've forgotten the other group from New Hampshire there. They all consistently use the 30-06 pump rifles.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, the Remington 7600, right, the famous Maine deer gun, and listen, I love that gun too, don't get me wrong. For me, it's all about the follow-up shot. And if you're a pump guy, if you hunt with a pump shotgun, you can transition to a pump rifle fairly easily. But I've always been a lever guy. And for me, a lever gun gives me, I can stay on target and follow with a lever gun easier than with a pump. With a pump, for me, when you're cycling that action, there's a lot going on in front of the gun, where the lever is underneath, and it's a quick click, click, and you can still traverse the rifle.
Yep.
So, you know, it's just one of those things. I think it's a choice, what you grew up with, what is comfortable for you as a shooter. For me, it just happens to be a lever gun.
Yeah. What if somebody has taken up deer hunting for the first time and they want to buy one rifle? Would you recommend that be a lever action gun in a 30-30 or 32 special, something like that, or what?
Well, the lever guns, I mean, lever guns have a storied history as deer guns, and not just in Maine, but in plenty of states. The thing I like about a lever gun is you really can appreciate the fundamentals of shooting. You can be just as accurate with a front ramp sight and a peep in the back using open sights as you would with a scope. And sometimes I think lever guns play to shooting ability and getting really getting to be a good marksman. And sometimes with high quality rifles with high quality glass, we kind of lose the fundamentals because we're relying on equipment instead of shooting technique and ability. So
yeah.
I think you can't go wrong with a lever gun.
I always hunted with a Lyman peep sight on my Marlin until my eyes got bad. We have a caller who may have a question for you, John. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with John Floyd. Go ahead.
Hey, fellas. How you doing? It's Matthew in Thorndike.
Hey, Matthew. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Enjoying this another fine, perfect summer day.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, isn't it?
My question is, and I don't have any statistics. I'm not going to argue with the answer, but I want to know what the guest thinks. Which rifle has killed the most deer in Maine? And if he has an answer for that, it's kind of a simple question. I guess I'm expecting a simple answer. and I have a follow-up question, which I'll give after I hear the answer.
Okay, go ahead, John.
I'd have to assume it's either the 30-30 or the 30-06.
Well, that's exactly what I was expecting, and I'm kind of tending towards the 30-30, so my follow-up is, why isn't that the best deer gun?
Carson. Well, like I said earlier, Matt, and thanks for your call, I prefer a 30-30. I hunt with a 30-30. I think that really the choice is dependent on the individual hunter's environment, their comfort level, and what's going to give them the best opportunity to put that deer on the ground ethically. So if you're a shooter that's comfortable with a 30 caliber, that's great. And for me, I love a 30-30. I hunt with one. Some hunters are a little recoil shy, and 30-30 is not a lot of recoil, but for some folks it is. They may be more comfortable with a 243. So it's really hard to say. I love a 30-30, and I agree with you. It probably should be the best deer rifle in Maine.
Okay. I guess we're getting close to a consensus, although I think a bolt-action gun is safer, and I can give you the argument later if we have time. Thank you, Matthew. Appreciate the input.
Hey, you're welcome.
It looks like you got your wish. We have another caller, I believe, right, Norm?
Yes, we do.
Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with John Floyd.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Floyd, I was kind of wondering. I got a Remington 7400 and a Springfield, and it's got a scope over and under, and I was wondering, what's attached to the Uzi, what's it that's, you know, down underneath the thingamajig? What's that do?
Well, this here, Paul, is my neighbor Jim on the ridge up here.
Oh, what's his name? You're talking about what's his name?
His name is Jim. We call him Hermit Jim. He lives in a little cabin down on the back road near the swamp. And he's a good friend of mine. And, you know, he likes to give me a hard time here and there. And,
well, he's doing it.
I do have a question, though. I do have a legitimate question.
Go ahead.
What do you feel is the difference, and which do you prefer, a composite stock or a wood stock, and why?
That's a great question, Jim. And I am a big wood fan. I love traditional rifles. I love the beauty of them. I love the artistry of them. I love the look of them. But when we are hunting in some of these environments that we hunt in, and it's rainy and damp and wet, I prefer stainless steel and a synthetic stock. So the answer is both. If it's a dry day, I bring the beauty queens out. If it's a really ugly day, I bring out the synthetic and stainless.
Yeah, there's nothing like a wood stock. Yeah.
Yeah.
You surprised me, John. I thought you were a composite guy. I thought, I agree. Yeah, for one thing, I agree with you on that. I really like the wood. All right, well, have a good show. I'll talk to you when
Okay, we appreciate your call.
Thanks, Jim.
All right, bye.
All right, we're going to take one more call, John, and then we're going to have to take a commercial break and go to our other guest. It's great. You're doing a great job, and we appreciate you being with us. Let's take one more call, John. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors with John Floyd.
Is this me? Am I on the line?
Yes, sir, you are. Go ahead.
Okay. What grain round did you and the fellow that you're interviewing use for the 35 Remington to kill Bear? Was it the 220 grain? And what did he use?
It was the client's rifle. I'm not sure what grain bullet he used. I do know it was the soft tip hunting round. I can find out for you. I can get a hold of him and find out exactly what round it was, but it was a couple of years ago. It was a 40-yard shot. He was actually a archery hunter that had a malfunction with his bow, and we always have clients bring a rifle as a backup, and that was his grandfather's rifle. I actually wrote a column in the Northwood Sporting Journal about it called Granddad's Gun. We can get back to you.
He used his Bowie knife and jump on the bear.
I'm pretty sure he didn't do that. Yeah.
You know, McCullough, my recollection when I used a 35 Remington was, I believe, 200 grain bullet.
Yeah.
My for deer. Not for bear, but for deer. Yep.
All right.
Well, good questions. We appreciate the call.
Okay. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
For being on the air.
Thank you.
And we're running up against the clock here, John. I wish we had more time to spend with you, but we have another guest queued up, so we'll be talking to her in a few minutes after the break. Thank you for being with us and enlightening us on the best deer gun. It looks like it might be the 30-30, but I'm not sure.
Well, I don't think we'll ever know, Paul, and it was a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
All right, and thanks again for writing for the Journal. We appreciate it.
Yeah, take care.
Take care, John. Yep, bye-bye. Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break here to make a buck, and then we'll be back with Kelsey Sullivan, and we'll talk about the outlook for grouse, or as Norm would say, partridge in the state of Maine. Stay with us. All right, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and I believe, do we have Kelsey standing by? Okay, you're working on it. All right. Kelsey Sullivan, and I think I referred to him as a her, and that was a mistake, and I apologize for that, Kelsey. Kelsey is a man, a male, and we'll be hooking up with Kelsey just as soon as board operator Norm makes the connection. And, of course, the grouse outlook is always interesting. Every year it always varies and changes. And we're going to have Kelsey, who's the game bird biologist, tell us about what the grouse outlook might be for this fall when the season opens the 1st of October. And we look forward to talking with her. And if you have any questions, the number to call is 1-800-966-1039. Do we have Kelsey standing by?
Hey, people.
Hey, Kelsey, you sound like a guy.
Tonight I am.
Okay. Nice to have you aboard, Kelsey, and we appreciate you taking the time to be with us. We thought with the fall in the just around the corner, it might be good to have you tell us a little bit about what the bird hunters can expect in the grouse woods this fall.
Yeah, I think overall they can expect a relatively good year. Most places that had real dry weather and then got some precipitation through the summer, I think you could expect pretty good. We had our drumming surveys. We have a few drumming surveys in the spring, and most of those were pretty positive. Several of them were up above average quite a bit. So that's one measure. You know, that's springtime, and then of course production is a whole another factor, and that's related to more the conditions during the nesting season. And I think conditions were relatively dry. And pretty good overall. You know, I think there's been some concern about how dry it's been throughout the summer, and that may influence the condition of individual grouse. But I think overall, we're going to be doing pretty good this fall.
Now, why is the drought a hazard to a grouse like in midsummer, for example? Is it because of forage?
Yeah, and there's a balance, you know. They like I said, they do good in dry weather for nesting, the less predation, and then hatching success is higher. But as you get into a longer, prolonged period of dry, the food sources start to kind of become less robust and less abundant. So you could start influencing the the insect abundance and fruits especially. So, you know, that's when you it's probably folks running around the woods this summer probably saw, you know, fewer raspberries on the bush and even dried up, you know, even in, around where I am, black raspberries, we had hardly had any. So that related to the lack of water. So,
well, you know, that's interesting because we have, we love blackberries. Diane and I like to pick them, make pies and so forth. And where we, I'm not going to tell you, but where we are, they were, I don't know if phenomenal may be too big a word, but they were pretty good, pretty robust and plump. And I kind of surprised me because of the drought. I said it to Diane, I said, we're probably not going to have any blackberries at all. The raspberries were pretty sparse, but the blackberries were quite plentiful where we are.
Yeah. It's very different from where I was, but
yeah.
But, yep, and we saw that with the raspberries too. But
okay, we have a caller, Kelsey, who may have a question for you. Let's take the caller. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Kelsey Sullivan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to make a couple comments on the subject that we just came off from, as far as the favorite rifle or whatever like that.
Okay.
As a hunter safety instructor for 40-some-odd years, there's a surprising number of people that do not realize that probably the Winchester Model 94 is one of the most dangerous guns there is out there. And as a 16-year-old, I cut my teeth on that, and I hunted with one for many, many, many years until I had to have glasses. So then I got a rifle with a scope. The problem is, all right, as with any...
I know what you're going to say, and I couldn't agree with you more. Go ahead.
When you load that rifle and you put that bullet into the chamber and you let the hammer down, if you don't let the hammer down all the way and then pull it back to the semi-cock, which is a safety, and hear it click, if you just let it down, all right, it can be on the edge, and a good thump,
yep,
all right, can make that thing go off.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, good
so
point. Yep, okay.
I think up until a few years ago, I haven't checked in the last 5 or 6, but up until a few years ago, the 30-30 still outpaced like the 30-06, 308, probably because it was such a mixture of the 30 calibers.
Yeah, yep.
All right, but that gun is still out there, and I still hunt with mine. The other thing is, you just mentioned a minute ago about the grouse season opening October 1st. Well, that's been changed. All right, pheasant, ruffed grouse, bobwhite quail, gray squirrel, snowshoe hare, snowshoe hare, they all open on the 26th of September.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that's in the law book.
Can you confirm that. Kelsey?
Oh, yeah, he's correct. Last year was the first year that the season was timed for last Saturday of September.
Oh, so it does open on the 26th of September.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, good information. Appreciate that, caller.
Okie dokie.
And good comments on the lever-action guns. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Kelsey, getting back to grouse, one of the questions I want to ask you is when you or any other biologist says the outlook is going to be relatively good, that's a little bit of a qualification. The benchmark might be last year. How would you characterize last year's grouse season? I don't really have any idea, but how do you characterize it? Was it pretty good?
Last year, I would say it was, you know, it's below average overall.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, you know, when we say relatively, relative to years past, but also relative to how the state overall is doing.
Yep.
So, you know, when you say, I guess not maybe relative, but overall, but there are areas that we expect that aren't going to be as abundant just because of drier conditions.
Okay.
Last year, I think overall it was a tough year for grouse hunting.
So you're saying this might be a better year than last year, right?
Yes, I believe it will.
Okay, that's good. And the other thing I keep hearing from some of the folks who spend a lot of time up north is that there seem to be pockets of grouse. In a place where I go to the woods a lot in Piscataquis County, southern Piscataquis County, spent a lot of time in the woods, and I've not seen one grouse. But I guess they're seeing pockets of them up north, huh?
Yeah, and I think, we have actually two of our drumming surveys are
up off the Reality Road and up west of Ashland, and those numbers weren't real good this year, but that's also related to cutting and how changes in cutting practices and that affects, grouse, and so that's likely the result of pockets of grouse too. So
okay, but we have
I think there'll be more pockets this year.
Good, that's good. We have a caller standing by. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Kelsey Sullivan.
Yeah, I appreciate the subject on rough grouse, and I enjoyed that very much as a youngster. You know, the wetland areas, Arno, Old Town, Hudson, we used to have quite a bit, but the introduction of a turkey competition devastated them. And of course, where the nesting is on the ground, the coyotes just, it's terrible. We used to have just a raft of whippoorwill, too, where they are kind of a ground nester also, and whippoorwill. You know, there are things of opportunity for the coyote population. So, in other words, when they took out the coyotes recently, locally here, our population started coming back. I was really pleased to see, the drumming, seeing them take off, and of course with chicks they act a special way.
Yeah.
But, the competition for these birds is really at stake here. And,
I'm not sure you're right about that. Let's ask Kelsey. Kelsey, is he right that turkeys are a detriment to grouse populations?
I would disagree with that. And we did do some research within the last 2014, 2016, where we had two study areas, and one was actually where you're talking about, the Milford Stud Mill area. And we found a good number of grouse there, and there's a good charge of turkeys, too, so they're coexisting there. The other study site was on Fry Mountain, which is a managed area for rough grouse, and that's in Waldo County, which has one of the highest densities of turkeys in the state. And Fry Mountain itself, when there's good habitat, that's akin to the numbers that you see up in District 1 west of the Allagash. So both of those places had relatively good numbers, and they're also areas where there's good numbers of turkey. So I think that's likely a misconception. When there's turkeys, there's more prey for coyotes with, there's more turkeys, so they probably actually take the pressure off of.
Yeah, if I was a coyote, I'd much rather have a turkey than a grouse.
The opportunity.
Right?
Ask a further question.
Yeah, go ahead,
Colin. The mixture of the coyote-turkey intermixing, thorn bushes specifically, this region here, there was a lot of thorn bushes. And those turkeys will clean them out, and so you could see that pressure. And also, the pressure of the coyotes. It would be very nice managed. Sometimes they come in and they clean out the bears when they get out of hand. Used to be years ago, they'd take a heavy-duty truck and just load them up. But now, you've got them in cages and what have you.
All right, we appreciate the call. We've got to do a commercial break here. Thank you, caller.
Take that pressure off.
All right. Thank you, caller. We're going to have to take a quick break here. Kelsey, do you mind hanging on for a second?
Sure.
Appreciate it. Again, if you have a question for Kelsey, you can call at 1-800-966-1039. We just want to take a minute here to remind you that this program is sponsored in part every week by General Appliance and Brewer, a place to go for all of your appliance needs, whether you're talking about ranges, refrigerators, freezers, or even top-of-the-line compost toilets.
Right, the wave, baby.
You bet. And they have a complete line, as I said, of used and new, both electric and propane, and they're located at 91 Center Street in Brewer. Al Elkin runs the show over there. He's a great guy to do business with. He knows his stuff. He stands behind everything he sells, and installs those products, and he's just a wonderful fellow to do business with. His prices are always fair, and we urge you to patronize him as we do. Again, it's General Appliance in 91 Center Street in Brewer. You cross the old Bangor Brewer Bridge, take a right and a left, and he's right there on the right. He owns half the block there. You can't miss him. General Appliance in Brewer, the place to go for all of your appliance needs. And he also carries a complete line of gas lights for your camps or cottages. General Appliance in Brewer. Are you still there, Kelsey?
I am, yep.
Thank you. So anyway, we're getting back to the, before the digression there, we're getting back to the fact the grouse outlook is relatively good for this fall. And there was a time, I believe, when you folks were engaged in some type of a first ever done grouse survey. Is that still being done?
I'm not sure. Are you? I'm not sure. The two things that we do are drumming surveys in the spring, and then we also have been doing the moose hunter, grouse observation survey. So those are the only two things that I'm aware of.
So wasn't there some kind of a telemetry program where they were tagging?
Oh yeah, some grouse research. Yeah, sure. I'm sorry. Yep, exactly. That's kind of what I was referring to with the other caller about the two study areas that we had, but we tagged over 260 grouse from 2014 to 2016, and then tracked them, measured reproductive success, habitat use, and then also
was there any significant finding to come out of that grouse survey?
There was a couple, and one specifically was there's always been concern about the December harvest, and folks, the perception is that grouse are more vulnerable in December. They're budding and they're on the trees and
right.
They're basically easier targets. But the information that we found was that for overall the harvest was about 3.5-4% total of the total harvest was in December. So that supported our feeling that December it doesn't seem
not a problem.
Lost to grouse. Yeah.
We have another caller standing by. Let's take the call. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors with Kelsey Sullivan.
Hi. My comment would be about coyotes being detrimental to our grouse, and I think it might be just the opposite of that. The coyotes, they're here to keep a balance. They take care of the mesocarnivores, which are actually more apt to be the guys that are seeking out the eggs on the ground, which is where the biggest damage would be done. Skunks, in particular, raccoons. So I just get a little irritated that people seem to demonize our eastern coyotes wrongly. So that's my comment.
Okay, we appreciate your viewpoint. And do you have a comment on that, Kelsey?
No, I just think that's a great point that and it kind of follows with your comment about why coyotes probably won't target small things that, like the caller said, they're targeting skunks and coons and things that are running on the ground that are easier to get. So I think that's a pretty good point.
Yeah, and I would imagine turkeys probably a primary prey of a coyote, wouldn't they be?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, caller. Thank you. Appreciate your comment.
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people will comment about, and it's happened to me in the springtime. You're calling a turkey in, and a coyote comes out to the side of you on your shoulder. So that's kind of indicative of that they're keyed into turkey behavior, especially in the springtime.
Yeah. Are you an upland hunter?
I am. Yep.
Yep. What's your favorite way to cook grouse?
Onions, garlic, and butter.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah, in an iron skillet, right?
Yep, straight up. Yep.
You betcha, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm tasting it already. Wow, I can't wait.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, look, it's been a pleasure to have you here. Any other points you'd like the public to be aware of, Kelsey, before we wrap it up?
We want to get the message out just for folks. There's been an uptick in outdoor pursuits. With the coronavirus, we've seen quite an increase in participation in several different outdoor pursuits.
That's a good thing, right?
It's a good thing, yep. But it also means that people have to be a little more careful out in the woods. So, especially we expect a pretty good upland season, so folks should just make sure they know where they're shooting and just pay attention to their surroundings that much more.
You bet. Okay, well, thank you very much. We appreciate you being. We hope you come back sometime, Kelsey. It's been great.
Sure. Anytime. Thank you.
All right.
Talking to you.
And have a good fall. Thank you. Okay, that wraps up our program tonight. We appreciate you being with us, and all the calls were great. Next week, our guest will be Paul Fuller, who is a gun dog trainer. And we'll see you all next week right here on Maine Outdoors.